success. All for one.
And one for all.
And one for all.
Yeah. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chains nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which is good for the economy because now everybody gets a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guest is Joe Trinder. Joe, welcome to the program.
Oh, kia ora, buddy. How are you?
Well, yeah, somewhat fabulous is my standard remark. Go ahead.
I'm here today to talk to you about John Ansell as a right of response. My name's Joe Trinder. I'm the editor of AotearoaGovt.com. It's a Māori website, Māori sovereignty movement. And what I want to do today is talk about the entrenched treaty hate movement. Now, Vinny, what's the Treaty of Waitangi to you?
Agreement between two peoples getting British subjectiveness, you know, they become subjects of the crown, and all the benefits that go with it, like a legal system, military defence. If you come under attack, the empire will come in and sweep in and protect you, allegedly. Didn't work very well in World War II when they destroyed Singapore, but that's basically it. Just two people living together in mutual peace and harmony with frickin' respect.
Yeah, that's a pretty good description of it. Well, way I think of it is that in 1840, if you were to look at the world in 1840, Britain at that time was at war with China over the Opium Wars. China did 2/3 of Great Britain's economy. And so what they were looking at is across the planet, the British diaspora had colonised vast sections of the planet from North America, Australia to Africa. And what they wanted to do this one time was get enlightened colonisation. And they thought that they could, the British Colonial Office honestly thought that it could get it right this one time, enlightened colonisation. So what they did is they sent Captain William Hobson of the Royal Navy out to New Zealand to sign a treaty between the Her Majesty Queen Victoria and the United Tribes of New Zealand. So that's what I think of our New Zealand's founding national document. It's fantastic. It's enlightened colonisation. And as Vinny, as you said, I agree with you. It is about two peoples caring for each other, as also the Race Relations Commissioner Susan Devoy described it. And I agree with her on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've always seen the thing that I get most about race relations is what Dame Fina Cooper said: marry each other. You got a problem with somebody else's race? Sort it out in the bedroom. And sure enough, everybody's been intermarrying all over the country. So it's like there's nothing pure about our race anymore. There's really not that much of a percentile that differentiates race in this country anymore. We're all a bunch of mongrels, aren't we?
Yeah, well, that's right, yeah. Well, what John Ansell is and his group Treaty Gate, what I like to call them are treaty haters, or because what they do is they hate New Zealand's founding national document, the Treaty of Waitangi. Now, for all the American listeners out there, if you were to know of anyone that hated your founding national document, the Declaration of Independence, you'd probably call them un-American. You'd probably call them a terrorist. You wouldn't think of them very highly as American citizens. Well, here in New Zealand, the roles are entirely reversed. If you hate and despise your founding national document, you're someone to be looked up to. You're someone who could run as prime minister, like Don Brash. You're someone that society respects. So here in New Zealand, we've got the roles entirely reversed. We don't enjoy or like or our history or our founding national document. And I think that what we need to do is start to really acknowledge it. Yeah.
So why do they hate the treaty exactly? What is it that John Ansell said that he hates about the treaty itself?
Well, what John is saying is he thinks that there is an alternative treaty called the Littlewood Paper. Now, the Littlewood Paper, what it says in the Littlewood Paper is to all New Zealanders. So it's vastly different from the original Treaty of Waitangi. What the original Treaty of Waitangi says, and I'll quote it, to the respective families and individuals thereof the full, exclusive and undisturbed possession of their lands and estates, forest, fisheries and other properties. So this is absolutely everything between heaven and earth. You name it. This is wind, this is sun resource, this is the foreshore. That really does mean everything that you will see a Māori activist complaining about on Waitangi Day. They're not having people on. It really does say that. This is what their ancestors really signed up to.
So, and that was the Littlewood Treaty.
No, what the Littlewood Treaty says is it's vastly different. The Littlewood Paper, it says to all New Zealanders. So instead of saying that it's to the respective families and individuals in the United Tribes, it says it's to all New Zealanders. So basically what the Littlewood Paper is saying is to any man and his dog that comes to New Zealand, whether he's from Syria, Afghanistan, he now owns all the lands of New Zealand. So what's really wrong with the Littlewood Paper is why would 530 chiefs sign up to a treaty that offered their lands to anyone that turned up to New Zealand? It's illogical.
Perhaps they were fearful of threats by rival tribes taking their land, enslaving their people, perhaps, and wanted protection of the British Empire?
I think it was more around trade, to be honest.
United Tribes had the United Tribes before the treaty actually been flying the United Tribes flag and engaging in trade, or was that afterwards?
What happened is they had their own Declaration of Independence in 1835, and what they did is they declared to the British Colonial Office that they were a sovereign nation. So this is 5 years before signing the Treaty of Waitangi. So what happened in return is King George gave them their own coat of arms or their own flag, white ensign, that you often see Māori flying today. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I was just thinking about this too, is in terms of Māori hapus, tribal areas and things of that nature, what would a Māori system of government look like differently, I mean, in terms of Māori sovereignty?
Well, I think it would be a lot more left-orientated than right-orientated like the New Zealand government. It would probably lean closer to socialism, as a lot of Māori politicians brought in socialism, although you do see a lot of Māori conservative MPs like Winston Peters, Hekia Parata. So it could even have a broad spectrum. It could be no different from what the New Zealand government is if there was a Māori sovereignty movement. But I don't think so. It's going to be happening in the near future. There's no calls for Māori to self-govern themselves at the moment, or what they call tino rangatira tangata. Yeah.
Go ahead, Vinny. Well, I was just wondering as well, in terms of the treaty grievance process, How much money has been obtained by the New Zealand government and given to Māori since the treaty grievance panels and so on and so forth started? And how much of that money filtered down to the poorest of Māori who need it the most?
Okay, that's a really good question. And what I'll do is I'll actually break it down into the numbers. So the Waitangi Tribunal was started in 1975 by Matthew Rachu. And what it was designed to do was compensate Māori, not for the Treaty of Waitangi, but really for the New Zealand Settlements Act 1863. Now, what the New Zealand Settlements Act did is it confiscated 3 million acres of private land. Now, as you heard me say before, in the Treaty of Waitangi, that it says undisturbed estates. Well, what this did, it was inconsistent with the Treaty of Waitangi, and what it did is it confiscated 3 million acres of land. Now, what John will tell you about the New Zealand Settlements Act, it was against tribes that rebelled. Well, that's so far from the truth, it's not funny. What really happened is it confiscated from tribes that were fighting for the British government. These were people that were in the New Zealand Armed Forces, the Armed Constabulary. And so it took land from them. It took land from iwi and tribes that were doing nothing. They were just sitting there. So it was just a policy that was, it broke a whole lot of British laws as well. What it did is it broke the Constitutions Act. Under the Constitutions Act, it says the state may not procure private land. Now, in the Treaty of Waitangi, it says that Māori are British subjects, so therefore we're protected by British laws. Secondly, what it did is it broke the Magna Carta, and that's a right to representation. So you should be allowed to go to court. If the state's going to take your land, you should be allowed to go to court. And also, in the first to fourth parliament, when the New Zealand Settlements Act was being decided upon, there were no Māori in parliament. It wasn't one in parliament, yet Māori were 80% of the population, and there were 70 British colonial MPs in parliament. So it's kind of not fair. So to get 2% value of the confiscated estates today is, John's winning. He can't see. Chris Finlayson is doing him a favour because these are full and final treaty settlements. Once these are finished, and it probably is only going to go up to $2 billion, then it's full and final. That's it for all iwi.
So, and again, $2 billion, how much of that gets to Porta Māori who need it?
Okay. This is a really interesting question that a lot of British New Zealanders ask. And first off, that it's not the business of iwi to give welfare to their members. And because first off, they've only got hundreds of millions of dollars to do it with. It's not a lot of money if you're wanting to hand out money. And also, handing out welfare does not create income. So what they
well, they
what
could
they
build
have to
schools,
do,
marae, have food, community gardens, things of that nature. You know, there's all sorts of different cultural and resourceful things that have benefited Māori throughout the ages.
Yeah. If you were to think of it of a business perspective, imagine you were given $170 million. Now, if you handed it out to all the people, then all that money would disappear. What they have to do is they've got to invest it in business like Naitahu. Naitahu owns a lot of the tourist business throughout the South Island. Now, what happens is that brings back recurring revenue. It's pointless giving out money if you're not creating recurring revenue. So once you create that recurring revenue, then what you do is you create scholarships and then you hand out scholarships. It's better to teach a man to fish than to, So that's how they're doing it, is building up their base revenue. So take Naitahu, for instance. They got $170 million for the entire South Island, which is the size of Wales and England combined in landmass, and they've turned that into probably around about $5 billion. I don't know the numbers, but I know it's in the billions, and it's a lot of money. To turn $170 million into $5 billion, that's creating more revenue. And then now they're starting to get those base welfare initiatives in place, like they've got scholarships, they've got sports initiatives for kids where they'll, after school, they'll go down in like Invercargill and they'll play sports and they'll have a sports trainer. So those things do come eventually, but if you're only getting hundreds of millions of dollars, there's not a lot you can do with it until you've turned it into billions.
Well, it depends whether or not you're paying people to do it or whether you're using the money as a resource and asking community groups to volunteer their time and effort in order to make the programs work. A voluntaristic kind of society brings the community together, and communities that are involved in certain projects and things like that tend to be a lot more well off. Less people go hungry, less people get depressed, and less suicides. You know, the whole works.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah.
And this is also another thing that that really disturbs me as well, is the defathering of families just in general, I think, has hit Māori particularly hard. And I think it's like when you're a young boy and you haven't had your dad there for all or most of your life, you're seven times more likely to get a criminal conviction. And now nearly, what, half one elder I said to is more along the lines of 80%. Of prisoners in New Zealand are Māori. You're like nine times more likely to be convicted of the same thing that a white person would do and sent to prison for it. You know, I think there's parts of the system that are actually, in my opinion, deliberately practicing eugenics on Māori and trying to destroy them. And this whole treaty thing might be one part of it. Because you think about the profits, only hundreds of millions of dollars and stuff like that. It's not a hell of a lot to share around. So I think maybe it's not being shared around. And certain Māori are getting maybe more than their fair share, perhaps. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Joe Trinder is my guest.
I wake up every day as a daydream. Everything in my life ain't what it seems. I wake up just to go back to sleep. I act real shallow, but I'm in too deep. And all I care about is sex and violence. And every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but I let Sunday Eve give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because the world's so full of chaos and madness and various other forms of scumbag. If you lose your sense of humour, you go fucking nuts. And this is something I've also noticed just recently. I mentioned this on the show before for those who are avid listeners. Fluoride has just been taken out of the water supply in Hamilton. And you would not believe the debate that has been stimulated against this by moronic, incapable of researching or listening, mindless, brainwashed sheep who think that an ad hominem attack by calling you a retard or a conspiracy theorist is a valid scientific argument why fluoride is good for you. I've heard it repeated to me thousands of times. It must be true. Really? Why do you think they had to repeat it to you 1,000 times if it's so frickin' true, mate? All right. Joe Trinder is my guest. Now, we had to relay this because I appreciate, and Joe reminded me of this over the break, and it was actually quite spot on, really, that Americans in general don't even know what a Māori is. Would you give us a brief explanation of what a Māori actually is?
Okay. The Māori people are actually originally East Polynesians. The Polynesian people colonized from an area, probably Tonga, Samoa, all the way over to the East Islands. They colonized a part of the earth about the size of Russia down to New Zealand. And they were also 500 years before Columbus, they discovered North America and via Hawaii. And so there's been chicken bones found in South America that are pre-Columbian. So they explored the entire Pacific Ocean. And evidence of that is that they brought the kumara, or the sweet potato, back from South America, back over to New Zealand. And it was a staple diet of Māori when they arrived here at around about 1280 to 1350 AD. And so they were the first people here in New Zealand, despite some amateur historians disagreeing with that. And they can be seen in Hollywood on, the Hangover Part 2 with the tattoo that Mike Tyson's got. That's Māori. There's a new movie coming out called Ender's Game, where Sabine Kingsley will be playing a Māori character in there, a military Māori character. Once Were Warriors is a movie that shows Māori post-colonization and the effects of colonization on Māori. So we're well represented in Hollywood.
Robbie Williams, the big pop star, he's got a big Māori tattoo on his arm.
Yeah, that's right. And Russell Crowe is Māori. He is off Gladiator. He is on the Māori electoral roll. Māori is becoming not part of just New Zealand culture. It's becoming part of world culture globally. People are starting to be attracted towards it. And you'll notice it in the All Black haka, which is famous for the All Blacks. And that's a professional team that's won more than any other professional sports team in history. So, yeah, that's who the Māori people are. Yeah.
Now, we're getting into treaties and all of this kind of stuff. Now, like I said, the eugenics agenda, it's not just being played on Māori, mind you. It's hitting Māori particularly hard, though. And some believe that there's a genetic predisposition through traditional diet and so on and so forth. What's happening to Māori with the introduction of all these processed foods and things like that? Obesity levels are going well out of control. Smoking, well out of control. Solo parents, well out of control. People going to prison, well out of control. I don't think the Māori people orchestrated all of that coincidentally on themselves.
Well, what was interesting in your last interview with John Ansell was, and the first off, how he starts off is, Māori are privileged and they live in entitlement. Then around about 10 minutes later, he just announced all the stats that you've just mentioned, highest unemployment, highest prison rates, highest on welfare. Well, I always perceived that if you were unemployed in prison, is not somewhere you would really find privilege. You'd maybe find things like maybe gang rape or getting shivved, but it's not really in the same ballpark as privilege. With all those statistics that you've just mentioned, I think there is that falls squarely on colonization. I think that Māori haven't managed to adapt as quick as they could to colonization. And it does take a terrible effect on every single civilization that has been colonized across the world, from Australian Aborigines, North American Indians, Iroquois, Cherokee, you name it. Wherever a civilization has been colonized, it's been it's been a mitigated disaster, to be honest.
Oh, South American culture is just fracking decimated by the Spanish, annihilated. You know, this is the true story of colonization. You know, all around the world, dig this. You ever met somebody and you know that they're really bad person. They've got no empathy whatsoever. You know, they're the classic quintessential psychopaths that will smile at you and treat you like one of the family until the day it comes to knife you in the spine. There's that kind of person running around the whole world, heating it up and just trying to take it all over. And it doesn't matter who the hell stands in their way. Anybody who's got like, hey, we've got a nice, decent culture. We treat each other with respect and with families and stuff like that. Well, good. You won't resist me when I shoot you. You know, this kind of mentality. And, you know, colonization, heck, we're living in a global empire. All right. You can't have an empire without colonies. And now the corporations own everything, including the government.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So how is this debate fitting in with that paradigm for you?
Well, with colonization, you mean? Like, how is it
with the global empire in place and the corporations owning everything, including the government? How does Māori sovereignty fit into that?
Well, if you look at like iwi corporations, they started in 1990. They got the first injection into the New Zealand economy. So the first treaty settlement started for Māori. Before then, they've basically been excluded from the New Zealand economy. They couldn't get bank loans. So they've started. And now they started with $1 billion. Well, the Māori economy is almost, in 20 years, gone up to $35 billion. And this is just through investment, wise management of that $1 billion. Now, the New Zealand Stock Exchange, which is several hundred years old, it started in the 1800s, and it's a mixture of all exchanges from around the country, it is valued at $45 billion. So Māori, now that they've got a chance in the economy, are starting to catch up. Probably by about 2030, they will pass the New Zealand Stock Exchange.
And may I ask as well, considering that, there's the, you know, you can't throw money at a problem, can you? Social problems are caused by social causes, aren't they? And what I've found, and this is across the board, doesn't matter what race you are, handing out welfare really of any kind, as we mentioned before, you know, teaching a man to fish, actually really destroys people. It makes them depressed, unmotivated, and they keep finding ways to rot the system. You know, I have several cousins up north that are exactly this way inclined, you know, trying to tell me what different lies that I can tell so I can get extra benefits out of the government and things like this. I was just wondering, does this mentality exist where the hand that feeds you is also the hand that holds you down and does so deliberately?
Yeah, well, I understand what you mean. Welfare is absolutely devastating for people. It doesn't help them really in the long term. But there is a cause why people are actually there on welfare. And I can relate it back to the New Zealand Settlements Act 1863. If those people had their land not be taken off them and then they were sort of pushed into state housing, today they would be the land gentry. Their parents would have been able to afford university educations for them, and they wouldn't be at the bottom of the food chain in New Zealand. So if you look at New Zealand, it's a cappuccino economy. The Polynesian and Māori people, they're at the bottom of the food chain and they're suffering on a daily basis. Like, if we're to talk about privilege, I at the moment, I live in state housing area in Mangere in South Auckland. Yesterday I saw a British man scavenging through the rubbish and getting out food out of a rubbish bin, and he wasn't Māori or Polynesian. This is an area of poverty. Where John lives, he lives down in the waterfront in Wellington. It's quite a wealthy area. And so if you were to look at New Zealand, at a map of New Zealand, where the Māori Polynesian people live, we live in the poor areas, and British New Zealanders, they don't live in the same areas as us. It's like they all left or something. Yeah, so...
Well, see, I'm also really concerned about the term British New Zealanders. I mean, what does that mean? I mean... if you weren't born in Britain, didn't spend any time there, are you a British New Zealander?
Well, I'll be honest with you.
Are you just a New Zealander?
I'll be honest with you, Benny. I've asked Anglo-New Zealanders, Pākehā, or British New Zealanders what they want to call themselves. And we try and ask them delicately. I asked about 20 of them, what do you want to be called? I mean, you aren't Māori, and we have to have a name for you. And we invented the name Pākehā, and you don't agree with the word Pākehā, so what do you want to be called?
Have you ever been at a party where you got somebody in front of you you recognise but you don't remember their name? You know what you do? You use pronouns, you know, names that stand instead of a noun, like bro, dude, or cuz, man.
yeah, that's right. Or mate.
Yeah. That's right. What do we call you people? Well, just call me mate, you know, bro, dude, whatever. and there's also this other question I have as well, is personal national identity, and what happens when a country doesn't really have a cohesive national identity, that there is in fact a separate identification, like we've got one New Zealand general role and we've got one Māori role. And I wonder what the effect is of social cohesion there. Is if do Māori feel separate from the New Zealand government, separate from all the other people that live here?
Well, that's a good subject, Vinny. What happened in history about 146 years ago was Māori weren't allowed on the general electoral roll if they had tribal lands. So if they wanted to add those lands into being private lands into the economy and then get bank loans on them or try and develop the land into a farm, what they had to do is they had to go to the native land courts. And if you didn't do that, you weren't allowed on the general roll. So what it was actually racist democracy, that if you had private land and you didn't want to enter it into the economy for sale, then you remained on the Māori electoral roll. Now, there were four Māori seats started up, and these were held by people that were kūpapa chiefs. They were fighting as officers for the New Zealand government and the armed forces and the armed constabulary. They didn't choose people who we wanted. They chose people who they wanted. Now, there were 70 MPs in Parliament, and Māori made up probably 70-80% of the population. So democracy was not really working out. Now, 146 years later, we're still with these Māori seats, and they're still a minority seat, and they haven't been turned off or anything like that. There's political parties out there that want to stop them. But, you know, these were forced on us, and now that Māori are starting to use them to their advantage with MPs like Hone Harawira, like your last caller you had, and he's starting to say the things people don't want to hear, but they've got to be said. Well, that's just the way of democracy. In fact, how a democracy should really work is we should all have race-based seats. Why not? Could you not have sit for the Pākehā seat of West Auckland? Why can't there be the Asian seat of Howick? And so why can't we turn a democracy around into racial-based seats, and so everyone's...
Yeah, and so everybody's cohesive. Right, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break. We seem to be having a little bit of technical difficulties here. It matters not. Okay, well, anyway, seeing as we're probably doing this with a little bit of dead air in the background, sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. A little bit of issues. Anyway, turning about making a more cohesive society, and I think this is actually the very point, is do you make a society more one by separating out everybody's representation of their own particular social groups and their own particular interests, or do you broad brushstroke and say everybody has the same basic needs and same basic interests?
Well,
food, shelter, water, clean air, energy, freedom, the ability to operate your own businesses, the ability to support a family with decent wages and things of this nature. These are very universal principles. Incidentally, if all of these things were paid attention to, it would appear that the problems in society, and particularly those problems that seem to have hit Māori particularly hard, would become solved because they're universal and they wouldn't be left behind with the rest of it. Unless, of course, it's racially motivated. And I see a lot of racial profile going on, particularly by the New Zealand police. And they're always busting people for basically, if you're Māori, you're walking down the street, you've got a tinny in your pocket, you're wearing a hoodie, and you've got a starter cap on or something like that. Hey, you get stopped. But if you're driving a Porsche, wearing a slick suit, and you've got a gram of cocaine in your pocket, oh, come on through, sir. Selective profiling, enforcement, and much higher conviction rates. So this is what happens, I think, when you start thinking about people based on race instead of just treating them as a human being, part of the human race. How do you feel about that, man?
Well, let's take a look at what's been happening in New Zealand news recently. And if you've been keeping a track on the news in New Zealand, there's been actually quite a lot of discrimination going on towards Māori and Pacific Islanders just recently. And it's happening now on a weekly basis. Like, even Asians are affected as well, Asian New Zealanders. I'll show you this cartoon that was in the Marlborough Express. Now, if you put in racist cartoon in Google, you'll find out about it. Now, what the cartoon portrays is it portrays...
What does it say? What's the speech bubble? Could you read it out? I couldn't make it.
If we can get away with this, the more cash left for booze, smokes, and pokies. So what's happened in New Zealand...
And what it's got, just for the radio listeners, it's got a image of some giant obese Māori jogging along with these little white kids around them and then just talking about getting more booze, smokes and stuff and pokies, the gambling and all of this sort of stuff. Right? Is that what I...
Yeah, so that's absolutely correct. So what it's working off stereotypes that Māori people are and Polynesian are obese, they gamble, they smoke, and honestly, it's not true. I don't smoke, I don't drink a lot anymore. I went to Las Vegas, spent a week there, I didn't gamble once. So they're working off stereotypes, and so these are discriminatory media articles that are in the New Zealand press all the time, and they hit the entire world. The whole world finds out about these. Like, recently we had a MP called Richard Prosser, and he made a comment about men from the Middle East are from Wagistan. We had a young lady...
Are you sure his name was Richard Prosser or something that rhymes with Prosser?
Something that rhymes with Prosser. recently, Air New Zealand rejected a girl who was trying to become an air hostess steward at Air New Zealand. Now, what she had is what people would call a tā moko, and Māori say a tā moko is different from a tattoo. But it's what it is. It's sort of a koru design on her arm. Now, what their excuse was, Air New Zealand, this is a classic. They have aircraft and their liveries have got koru designs on them, all painted all over them, ferns and everything. Now, what their excuse was a customer would get on that plane that's covered in koru designs and then see the same koru design on this girl's arm and get frightened. And I was just thinking, where's the common sense here? Is common sense not common to everyone?
Like,
yeah.
It's like they're afraid. I mean, think about this, right? If a teacher gets sent into a school full of kids or something like that, and they've been working with kids for years, and suddenly one kid comes up to them and wants to learn something, and then they get freaked out by it. And they've been doing it for years. It's ridiculous.
I mean, hello, we're in the South Pacific. This is where tattoo was invented. And recently we had a Dutch diplomat come out to our naval base, HMNZS Villamal, and she made some really nasty comments about what we call a porphyry. It's a greeting, a Māori greeting. And what happened, because she made these comments, what she said was, it was grotesque and it was lewd and along those sort of lines. Well, what happened is a lot of New Zealanders agreed with her. And that really hurts, you know, when your fellow countrymen, you know, they're agreeing with someone who's criticising their own countrymen. So where's the patriotism, guys? Seriously. I mean, what other greeting are we going to give dictatories? Do we get out the bagpipes like the Scottish? Do we do Morris dancing? I mean, if there's something else we can bring to the fore, let's bring it. But until then, it's going to have to be porphyries. Yeah. What's your opinion?
Of people being welcomed in a traditional way with the Māori wailing and the dancing and the protruding of the tongues and the jabbing of spears into the air and the hopping around and the grass skirts and the full body tattoos and all of that kind of stuff. I think it's freaking awesome.
Oh, you're funny.
I mean, well, dig this. You know how badly communication and welcoming is turned into? Once upon a time, a guy would come to a person and he would actually take off his frickin' hat and say, good afternoon, good sir, how goes the morrow? This has been shortened over time to sup.
One other comment that Marie Krupp made was... she says she felt sorry for the Pākehā officers that had to stand and endure the porphyry. Well, I was also in the Navy as well, and she never thought to think that the men doing the porphyry were also naval officers as well. In fact, 50% of the armed forces is Māori. They're the men who are down the domestics on our warships or in the barracks in our army bases. So, you know, Māori do contribute to this country and they do try hard. There's just some that haven't coped with colonisation so well. And, you know, as a country...
I think they're just not coping with slavery very well. You know what's you know what's happening, bro? This is exactly the same thing that's been happening to African-Americans in America. Exactly the same thing, isn't it? Society been broken down. They put liquor shops and gun stores on the same street corners and stuff like that. And they just inject all this stuff. 80 million black babies aborted, the biggest genocide in the 20th century. You know, and nobody's talking about that kind of thing. Exact same situation, isn't it? People don't like to deal with slavery, and it destroys their communities.
Yeah. Well. One comparison I can make to of Mangere to some of the suburbs in Los Angeles is we don't have the gun stores, but we've got the fried chicken stores and we've got the liquor stores. And they're here in abundance here in South Auckland.
I have an amazing anecdote. I was down Otahuhu, right close. That's pretty close to Mangere, isn't it? And my friend had actually done his own personal survey. He likes a bit of gin and tonic, and he's trying to survey, you know, like the whole city pretty much in every single suburb, the liquor stores and the average price of it. He says the cheapest liquor in the country is South Auckland.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually quite cheap.
It's not a coincidence.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's quite cheap to live out here. Like if you go to the flea markets on a Saturday morning, so they do have a lot of sort of very cheap things here in Auckland, in South Auckland.
Now, speaking of society's woes, we've got about maybe 5 minutes plus left in the broadcast. And I wanted to say something about John Ansell. He is in a bad state right now. He didn't have as many people turn up to a meeting as he'd hoped. Another party, One Law for All, was set up, and they didn't even invite him to the creative meeting to set it up, and it was basically his idea. He's been sidelined by a lot of quote-unquote friends. He's had a death in the family right at this particular point in time, and that's the reason why he's actually not on here today for a debate. Is because he's feeling really, really down. And I said to him, in those situations, and I've walked the line, I've suffered everything everything you can imagine, just well, not everything you can imagine, but I said to him, look, bro, you just need to drink more and take a couple of weeks off, you know, recharge the batteries, because some of the stuff, it really does get on top of you, especially when things are crumbling to Shiite Muslim around you. But yeah. I just wanted to get that out there.
Oh, I'd like to say to John, I'm sorry that's all happened to you at this stage. And I honestly, I do hope that you that things do improve for you and that you do get back into it. Because even though I fundamentally disagree with your views on colonization as a gift for Māori, but what I do appreciate is that you've brought it to the fore. And had it not been for John, I wouldn't have gotten into investigating what this was all about. So, you know, he is getting at a point, and Māori don't. I don't think so collectively. I don't think so. We hate him, and I was really disappointed how he was treated at Waitangi and also on Radio Live, but. John, if you're out there and you're listening, I'd really like to have a proper debate with you, even on the show. So
well, you know what? Let's not even call it a debate. A discussion. Because that's how we do it here on the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're just, you know, we've just been sitting there having a laugh and talking about a few important things, isn't it? You know, that's the style that I like to put across. You know, there's nothing official about this. The show really is there. I think that's the reason why society is so misinformed and dumbed down in the first place, is because people aren't willing to just sit back and listen to each other speak and try to understand where they're coming from.
Mm. Well, we really appreciate if John would come out and just have a discussion with us and we, it's a great subject to chill out. It's interesting. It's New Zealand history. It's fascinating, and he's on to something. Which
he's generated more public interest in this subject than anybody in living memory that I can think of.
Mm. Well, that's right. If you know, I was talking to Morgan Godfrey, who we had a speak with a debate on Close Up on TVNZ. And that was the highest rating show that the Close-Up have ever had. So it's a subject that's very dear to all New Zealanders, of Māori, European, Asian, all of us. Yeah.
And what I find very interesting is that because there's such intense interest there, it means that there's probably extremes to both sides, you know, like there'd be racist white New Zealanders. And there'd also, do you reckon there's such a thing as a racist Māori? I reckon there is. I've been called a honky and a cracker before for no reason whatsoever. He was like, "Oh, you white boys don't know what it's like down in Otara, bro." You know.
Yeah, I'm sure there are out there. Yeah. And we do take the mickey out of John, but you know he's taking the mickey out of us as well. So he puts up those derogatory cartoons about us. We put them up about him. But you know, it's the game. Yeah, it doesn't mean we hate him.
Yeah. Well, as long as you're having a few laughs and it's all good humoured about it, because, you know, I when he came back, he actually borrowed my camera to take up there to Waitangi, and his assistant wouldn't turn on the camera when they were being roughed up by a couple of Māori guys kind of thing. And it's just like, oh, bro, see, it's when it gets to violence and you're ceasing to talk about it and reconcile differences and understand an issue. As soon as the fists start flying, the debate is over and nobody wins.
Mm-hmm. They should have welcomed him on to Te Tai Marae. He's interested in the subject. Let him put his voice forward. Yeah.
All right. Well, Joe, Trinda, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for your time today. And we'll put all these archives up on the website, thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, please donate or subscribe if you can. Having trouble paying the bills right now. We'll see you again sometime.
Ka kite, Vinny.